ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। जय जय श्री चैतन्य जय नित्यानंद जय अद्वैत चंद जय गौर भक्त वृंद। नारायण नमस्कृत्य शैव नरोत्तमं देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासं ततो जय मदीय चेत् मुखाकरोति वाचालं पंगुलांगायते गिरिं यत्कृपातमहं वन्दे श्रीगुरुं विनतारिणं परमानन्दमाधवम्। कृष्ण जय भक्त शेषो तार फिलनाम तार एक लोभ जे पाए से भाग्यवान। Remnants left by Krishna are called phila. Anyone who obtains even a small portion must be considered very fortunate. Samanno bhagyo hoyte tar prapti nahi hoy Krishna jate purna kripa se taha pai. One who is only ordinarily fortunate cannot obtain such mercy. Only persons who have the full mercy of Krishna can receive such remnants. Sukriti sabde kohe Krishna kripa hetu punya se jar hoya phila pai se dano. The word Sukriti refers to pious activities performed by the mercy of Krishna. One who is fortunate enough to obtain such mercy receives the remnants of the Lord's food and thus becomes glorious. Ato bole prabhuta sobhare vidai dila upalabhoga dekhiya prabhu nijo vasa aila. After saying this, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu bid farewell to all the servants. After seeing the next offering of food to Lord Jagannath, a function known as upalabhoga, he returned to his own quarters. So, by performing many, many pious activities, one is able to get the remnants of prasadam from the Lord. Nanda Sutta, the Chatter. So here it explains that how one is able to render pious activity is by the mercy of the Lord. The Lord gives His mercy to give that intelligence for someone to act in a pious way. You can see how people today, even they like to do something beneficial for society, but they lack the intelligence to know what is actually beneficial, what is pious. They may want to do something beneficial, so they think, let's have a festival for our city. We'll have a big barbecue contest, and this will unite all the people together, and we'll have fun, and it'll be something really good for the whole village. You know, we'll have a, like they had in Lynchburg, went through a big barbecue contest, right? So the person that first dreamed of that, he had this desire to serve his community, to help, you know, bring everyone. But what he's actually doing is simply, you know, accumulating tons of bad karma, cooking up so many animals. So they have a desire to do something, you know, that they think is good, but because they don't have the intelligence given by Krishna, they end up doing something which is actually worse, actually horrible. So somehow or another, when somebody does something which is really beneficial, even in a material sense, to others, that actually produces pious result, that's the mercy of Krishna. We shouldn't take it at that. Even somebody did so many pious activities that was with something automatic, or that old person should get the credit alone. Because even the intelligence to do something pious is also given by Krishna. And then by Krishna's mercy, one gets a prasadam. Krishna's desire is to see the fallen soul delivered, so he sends his devotee to preach and have this prasadam distributed to the fallen souls. So from all sides, the hidden hand of Krishna is visible, if you have the eyes to see. So, even someone who's you can't see any pious activity someone may have done. Some beggar or bum comes and asks for some prasadam. But that also is the result of some pious activity. It's also that causes mercy upon them by the Lord. Even they may have seen the Hare Krishna devotees chanting and they thought this is a nice thing. Somehow they, some favorable. Obviously those who are completely envious about Krishna, they won't like to accept prasad from the devotees' hands. And thus they're deprived from the mercy. Unless somehow or another, the devotees causes mercy upon them, gives them prasadam. So, without prasadam, without chanting the holy name, without devotional service, without pious activities, and how is it possible to become Krishna conscious? And without Krishna's mercy, how is it possible to get any of these? So therefore, sometimes devotees ask, how can we be humble? You see, the real point is that if we have the proper understanding, how can we be puffed up? Being proud is simply due to a lack of understanding. That with the proper perspective, we can see that everything is simply happening by the mercy of Guru and Krishna. Unfortunately, it's our lack of that understanding, our forgetfulness of Krishna's causeless mercy, that we start to attribute our success singularly to ourselves. Somewhere in all this, the devotee has some desire, some individual desire is there. Where along the way that desire manifested, some little desire, some little spark was there to go back to Krishna. And then that continuing desire to take the mercy of Krishna. So that in order to capture Krishna in this pastime of Damodar, two factors are there, the desire of the devotee and the mercy of Krishna in the other order. So, we may desire, but our ability to be able to achieve any kind of success in devotional service, we're dependent upon the mercy of Krishna. Simply these two factors, desire and mercy. We have to put our desire into practice. Through a devotional service, you see, when I was visiting some grihastha's house and their children are playing some kind of a video game, I don't know. They keep trying to rack up as many points. They have limited time trying to get the number of points. Very frivolous kind of thing, just how kids spend their time nowadays. But it just struck me as interesting that we have also limited time. And before, and in all these games, a lot of time the people, the little guys that play, they die. It says, you know, dead, game over. But they always get more lives. You get so many lives per game. So, we also get more lives, but we don't know. You know, it's really easy to take another life in a video game, but taking another life in this life is not so easy. You don't know where you're going to end up, and you're the actual player. It's not that someone else is just simulating somebody's activities. But as many points as we can score, you see, this is the real life game. It's not just a play. We're actually here to accumulate as many points in devotional service. So, the amount of periods that we remain idle, or we don't use our energy in Krishna's service, we are missing that opportunity. We don't know. The time is ticking. Everybody, we all have a limited period of time in this world. We may think, everybody thinks, well, I'm going to live a long time. It's not going to happen to me. But just like 1 year, 1 month ago, I might have been thinking, well, I've lived till I'm 50 or 60 at least. But all of a sudden, 1 second, I was just at a hair breadth away from death. And flying, like this time going to South America, our airplane, our jet was struck twice by lightning. The stewardesses were being thrown around in the cabin. They had to crawl underneath the seats and hold on for dear life. Things were flying. The plane fell down hundreds of feet at a time. Could have, luckily we were up so many thousands of feet that it didn't affect. If we were flying over a mountaintop or something, we fell a few thousand feet at one time. Maybe we would have just parked on the top of it. So, in this way, there's danger at every step. Nobody can say how long we have to stay in this body and when the last breath may come. You know, at that time, then we'll think, wow, how much time I wasted. Why was I just, sitting around? And why wasn't I using my valuable time better in Krishna consciousness? You see, but at that time, it's like too late, maybe. Maybe it's not too late. Maybe that time we'll get another chance, like I did. But surely we should. It may be too late. So now what we have, the consciousness, what we have, the ability, we should engage in devotional service as much as we can. It's Krishna's mercy. He's giving us the opportunity to, like I asked Srila Prabhupada, this month you get 100 times the benefit. So I said that maybe we should do something special or for the devotees. And then he wrote back, it's probably in the letter book, I didn't have a chance to review it, but he wrote back and said that it's like when the supermarkets have a special sale. This is to attract the new customers, the casual or new customers. The regular customers are going there all the time. They go there every day, whether it's a sale or whether it's a normal price. They're just the regular customers. But it's the new customers that they're trying to attract by the advertising and everything. So he said that this facility of getting 100 times the benefit in Damodar, especially for those who are like not in devotional service, that they can come and become for 1 month be a vegetarian, they can chant Hare Krishna, they can do some devotional service, because they can understand, like getting 100 times the benefit, so it's like an impetus. So even in India, during this month, many people practice vegetarianism, even if they're not strictly in other months, but in this month they follow. They go to the temples, they do various things, knowing that this is a special month. And especially grihasthas, they follow very strict rules to counteract any kind of transgression they might have done in the other time of the year by being grihasthas. But for the devotees, the point is that we are doing every max is supposed to be full out 12 months a year. You see, not just at this month, but every month, 12 months, whether it's 100 times or the same or whatever. We are there to get the maximum score. But of course, we are directly connected with Krishna already, so simply if we remain connected very strongly, well, we're guaranteed to go back to Krishna, to remain in Krishna's service eternally. Text 74, chapter 18, canto 6 of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Aradha Aradhana Bhagavata Ihamana Nirashisha Etu Nechantya Pipara Te Swartha Kusala Smita Aradhanam Bhagavata Ihamana Nirashisha Yetu Nechantya Pipara Te Swartha Kusala Smita Translation by Srila Prabhupada. Although those who are interested only in worshipping the Supreme Personality of Godhead do not desire anything material from the Lord and do not even want liberation, Lord Krishna fulfills all their desires. Translation with repetition. Although those who are interested only in worshipping the Supreme Personality of Godhead do not desire anything material from the Lord and do not even want liberation, Lord Krishna fulfills all their desires. Report by Srila Prabhupada. When Dhruva Maharaj saw Lord Vishnu, he declined to take any benedictions from him, for he was fully satisfied by seeing the Lord. Nonetheless, the Lord is so kind that because Dhruva Maharaj in the beginning had desired a kingdom greater than his father's, he was promoted to Dhruva Loka, the best planet in the universe. Therefore in the Shastra it is said, Akamo sarva kamo va moksha kama udaradi tibrena bhakti jogena yajeta purushan param. Translation. A person who has broader intelligence, whether he is full of material desires, free from material desires, or desiring liberation, must by all means worship the Supreme Whole, the Personality of Godhead. Srimad Bhagavatam 2.3.10. One should engage in full devotional service. Then, even though he has no desires, whatever desires he previously had can all be fulfilled simply by his worship of the Lord. The actual devotee does not desire even liberation. Anya vilashita sunyam. The Lord, however, fulfills the desire of the devotee by awarding him opulence that will never be destroyed. A karmi's opulence is destroyed, but the opulence of a devotee is never destroyed. A devotee becomes more and more opulent as he increases his devotional service to the Lord. Thus end the Bhaktivedanta Swami translation purport to the Srimad Bhagavatam, text 74, chapter 18 of the canto 6, in the matter of Diti vows to kill King Indra. So, it's a very interesting story, history, because Diti was very angry at Indra for having what she considered masterminded the plot against her two beloved sons, Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu, who were subsequently killed by Lord Vishnu. So somehow, of course, she couldn't take out her anger on Lord Vishnu, but took it out on her nephew, Indra. So she served her husband very faithfully, who was a great Prajapati and Rishi, Kasyapa. And so one day, being very pleased with her service, said that, "I can give you anything you want. What would you like?" And then she asked for a son who would be able to kill Indra, Kasyapa Muni's other son. So naturally this was, Kasyapa said, "What did I do?" You know, there are many verses about that less desirable nature of women who sometimes hold grudges in their heart. And although she was serving so nicely, appeared so loving, and then she turned around and said, "What do you like?" You know, instead of asking for something sweet and gentle, she asked for something so heavy, "I want to kill your other son, Usai." It took him by surprise. Well, in his greatness, he said, "Well, I can give you the process to do that. You have to worship Vishnu according to the Pungsavan, Brata, for 1 year. And if you don't make any mistake, then you can get such a son. You get whatever you want from the Lord. However, if you make a mistake in your practice, since it's a ritualistic ceremony, then you'll get the opposite thing, which will be that all the son will be a friend of the Lord Indra." So she went and practiced this quite a detailed practice. In fact, the next chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam in detail tells someone how to do it and gives the glories that, well, if you do that sacrifice for 1 year, it starts. One has to begin it in 5 days from now. So like the day after the full moon coming up, this is the Kartik full moon coming up. The day after that is the day you have. It's interesting, is it starting right now? I don't know. Tell all the Indians if they want. Here's the chance. All the congregational members, they can start that day, especially for women. But a husband can also do it if his wife is pregnant. It says, I don't know. They had to do it for 1 year, and on the coming full moon day, 1 year from now, then they had to fast for that day, then they had to feed the brahmanas, serve the guru, satisfy the brahmanas, and then they can take the remnants of the prasadam. Then they can get basically what they want from the Lord, if they did it properly. They can have, let's see here, able to achieve all the benediction he desires. A man or a wife may be able to achieve all the, or a girl, unmarried also, all the benediction he desires from the Lord. Good fortune, opulent sons, long living husband, good reputation, and a good home for wife. Unmarried girls, good husband, very good husbands. They get those who don't have any husband or son, in other words, those who don't want to marry. They can be promoted to the spiritual world. Women whose children have died after birth can get a child with long duration of life and also become very fortunate, possessing wealth. If a woman is unfortunate, she'll become fortunate. If she's ugly, she'll become beautiful. By observing this vrata, a diseased man can gain relief from his disease and have an able body with which to work. If one recites this narration while offering oblations to the pitas and demigods, especially during Sraddha ceremony, the demigods and inhabitants of Pitriloka will be extremely pleased with him and bestow upon him the fulfillment of all desires. After one performs this ritualistic ceremony, Lord Vishnu's wife, Mother Lakshmi, the goddess of fortune, will be very pleased with him. King Parikshit and I have completed describing the ceremony and how Diti got good sons, the Maruts. So, actually, This is a good program for our retreats in the rural areas. You can have, you know, 1 year program. You sign up, you know, they can do every day ritualistic program. But after 1 year, then like what happened with Diti, of course, she came with this desire. But after serving Vishnu for 1 year, she lost her envy against Indra and everybody. And when she saw that she had 49, one at once, she got 49 nice sons. Because when she did make a slight mistake, so Indra entered into her womb and cut up the sons with his weapon into 7 parts. But they didn't die. So it said there was from 1, they became 7. And he cut each of the 7 again into 7. And they became 49. And they're all alive. And so he figured, I better not cut them up anymore because, you know, it's like 49 is enough. So I think that might be almost like a record. Of course, apart from Peter Rast at 100. I don't know if that was all at one time too. But so she got 49 sons. When she got up from the bed after having childbirth, she saw 49 sons there with Indra. And they're all friendly with Indra, brilliant. And she became pleased. So then Diti admitted to Indra that actually I had done this vow in order to kill you and all your brothers, the sons of Aditi. But I wanted one son, but now I see I have 49, so you please tell me how did this happen. You must know, don't tell any lies. So she was honest to Indra. Then Indra, he said, well, I have to also be honest to you. I was also blinded by my selfish interest. I lost the sight of religion. I knew that you were doing a great vow, so I wanted to, and it was to kill me, so I wanted to find out a fault in you. When I found the fault, I entered your womb and cut the embryo into pieces. First into 7, then again into 7. But because you were doing so much devotional service, by the effect of your spiritual potency, none of the embryos died. And when I saw that there were 49 alive, I was struck with wonder and I decided that this must be the secondary result of your having worshipped Lord Vishnu. That by serving the Lord, He's not going to ask for forgiveness for His what He did. But Diti wasn't angry because anyway, she said at once she got 49, so she was quite happy. Of course, in this world you have 49 children, then people, oh my God, 49 kids, the bills, the clothes, the, you know, how do you feed them all? Of course, being in the higher planetary system, they kind of just, they grow up pretty quick and have to, there's no shortages like that. So, in this way, it was interesting that how the two started off as enemies. But although Indra, of course, superficially they were friendly to each other. Indra was serving her and she was tolerating him, but she had in her mind to kill Indra, have Indra killed in the end. But then, through the devotional service, she became free of envy. He became purified. And all the children became devotees. So everything worked out really good. So this is the interesting, because we were discussing about how sometimes devotees hold grudges against other devotees. And they come to the guru or they come to the Krishna and say, look at this person did that, I want justice, I want that person to be punished, I want vengeance. Not with a desire of helping the other person. Not with a desire of purifying the other person, but because I was offended and I am my, you know, I am who I am, and therefore I should, this should be punished. This should be retribution. That's a material desire. Wars are fought for those things. Many difficulties happen because of that. Prestige. My prestige has been cut, so I want to take vengeance. So Diti was feeling bad. She was doing all this worship of Vishnu for the purpose of getting her false ego. She wasn't going to benefit by having Indra killed, but her benefit was that she was angry. Her sons were killed and Aditi's sons were alive. So she couldn't tolerate that. Why should Aditi have live sons and she have dead sons? So she wanted to have the 12 sons of Aditi killed, but it turned out she got 49. She was a few times more than four times more kids than Aditi. Well, she was happy, okay. But that wasn't why she was happy. She was happy because she was in devotional service. So the lessons from this chapter is how someone can fall into, even though they're such a high parentage, such a high family, being the wife of Kasyapa, even after having fallen down in the sense that they had, well, had a sex at the wrong time, you know, not fall down in the sense that your husband and wife, but in a sense they did it at the wrong time. So they got lousy sons, in the sense that they got demoniac sons, instead of real pious sons. But still, as a mother, she was attached to her sons. It didn't matter whether they were demoniac or whether they were devotees. Mothers take care of their children, that's their glory. But then she went too far. Up to that point, nothing was wrong, but she went too far and became envious against the other wife. Why? Because she had sons. And what to speak of her sons may have had something to do with instigating the whole thing. That's what she thought. Whether ultimately Krishna came on his own free will, it didn't require Indra to really take much of an active part. He might have thrown in a few prayers there because the whole universe was being turned upside down by Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu. Because Aditi prayed to Vishnu. But ultimately it was the doing of Krishna. But Aditi couldn't see that. And we see how a devotee, sometimes something happens, somebody says something happens, and they don't want to see that ultimately this happened, Krishna allowed it to happen. Maybe in the past we did something that we deserve this to happen. This is just a kind of a token. Like we stub our foot, we cut our finger, so someone speaks harshly to us, it's also a kind of a karma. We're paying off some, especially if it's for something we didn't do anything wrong, we're just going and doing our duty, someone says something harsh to us or something inappropriate. That's their problem. But for us, okay, maybe I deserve this. If not immediately, for what I'm doing, but then in the past. So by this I'm getting rid of bad karma. But instead we say we take a vengeance. We take a offense that this person has said that. This person has done that. Even for small things, or things where they're not. And then that's what Diti was doing. And nobody says that what Diti did, even Indra is saying, what you're doing was materialistic. But because you were simply serving the Lord, at the end of the 1 year she could have got anything she wanted, but she was serving the Lord. And by that power of that devotional service, she became purified. She didn't want to have Indra killed after that. She forgot about that. She was happy. So similarly, we should avoid falling into the kind of pitfall that Diti did. And in case we can purify our heart, we still keep so many grudges and so many bad feelings to different devotees. We should really absorb ourselves in devotional service. You see. The ritualistic ceremony had certain things you have to do every day. You have to bathe, you have to be clean, you have to do certain, 10 times you have to offer obeisances, 12 times you have to offer oblations in the fire, so many times you have to chant certain mantras. You have to do so many different things every day. It's a ritual. The rest of the time, as long as you don't break the other rules that are there, like being a vegetarian and eating other prasadam and eating certain, doing certain things, well, you get the benefits of the sacrifice. It's not that one has to be 100% free of all desires or something. However, a devotee is much higher than a ritualistic practice. The devotee doesn't need to do these type of rituals, but a pure devotee, because anyway Krishna fulfills what the devotee desires. When you hear that even a devotee will get the things that he wanted before, even though maybe at the present time he's without desires, that's frightening. Who knows, you think it worried, what did I desire before? What if Krishna gives me some of those things? I don't know what a burden that would be. It had to be burdened, Maybe when somebody joined, they were a nice brahmachari, but they thought, oh, later on I'll get married, So then Krishna's providing a nice wife, but later they think, wow, why did I desire that when I started? I could have desired to be a worldwide preacher or something instead. Anyway, who knows what one desired when they first came, or before they came. Krishna will fulfill those things unless we're very careful. We don't have to ask. Rather, it may be more dangerous that, like Dhruva, he didn't want to get, well, finally when he reached Narayana, he didn't want to get what he wanted before. He wanted to directly be able to serve Narayana. Instead, he got what he wanted initially, which was a big kingdom for so many years. And for him, it was like a burden. He did it as a devotional service. So, the devotee gets what they want, what they desired, by Krishna's mercy, even if they don't ask for it. Of course, sometimes devotees pray, in case I ask for anything, I wanted something, please just give me a pure devotional service and never allow me to be separated. The King Kulashekar, he prayed that, I don't want even liberation. I simply want to be able to take birth in the family of your devotees and serve your devotees. To be able to serve you eternally through your devotees. So, the devotee doesn't need to have to do ritualistic ceremony. But of course, the devotee is supposed to be practicing 24 hours a day. Which is more difficult than the ritual. Right? The ritual doesn't say, well, in between times you could talk about something else or do something. But the devotee is not supposed to talk nonsense. Not supposed to do anything that's not devotional service. They're supposed to do 24 hours a day devotional service. That's the process of bhakti yoga. That's why a bhakti yogi is considered to be the best of all liberated souls. Why is a devotee considered liberated? Because he doesn't do anything material. Everything that the devotee does is Krishna conscious. From their attending the temple programs, to their devotional service, to even having garbhodan samskar, to have children, to eating prasadam, to taking rest for Krishna, offering their obeisances to Guru and Krishna when they take rest, chanting the Krishna Nam and obeisances to Guru when they first get up in the morning. From the morning to the night, everything is to be offered to Krishna. Therefore, a devotee is considered already liberated. There's no karma. Diti is not liberated. She had so many desires. But she became purified by devotional service. Even if someone's not a pure devotee, if somehow or another they do devotional service, they get purified. So there are so many tantras. This is a tantra. Pumsavana is one of the tantras. It's a ritual that one can do to get a particular purpose through serving Krishna in a ritualistic way. By doing that, someone gets purified. It's not on the same level as pure devotional service, but the process is devotional service. So it's considered the devotional service for some purpose, or karma mishrita bhakti, mixed with fruitive desire. Still, the effect was there. She became purified. So all these rituals in the Vedas are with the objective of ultimately bringing one to devotional service. When we achieve devotional service, there's nothing more to desire. There's nothing more to want. That is the final objective. You don't need to go back and do rituals. You see, for someone who's not in devotional service, who's kind of in the material world and they want to achieve some kind of success, well then these rituals are there. And by doing that, then they get purified and they become closer to Vishnu. In the future, by doing this karma kanda or jnana kanda, then eventually, bahunam janmanam ante gyanavan apadyante vasudeva sarvamiti samahatma sudurlamam. They finally realize that Vasudeva is everything and they become pure devotee of Vasudeva. So when we come to the Krishna conscious movement and we take the vows of initiation, it means that we're supposed to have already come to that conclusion that Vasudeva is everything. And that our only objective in life is to serve Vasudeva. Somehow there's some lacuna apparently in our training that devotees, even after going through everything, after taking anything, but then they kind of revert back to karma kanda or jnana kanda or even to maya, not realizing that they'd already reached the samam bonam, they just had to remain in devotional service. So before taking initiation, before surrendering, one should be very clear that this is what insignificance is. That now the purpose of initiation is that I want to engage in Krishna service directly. You see, Diti was a Brahmin. She took the first mantra of the second initiation, the caste Brahmin kind of initiation. And she was given the mantras needed for doing this ritualistic ceremony by her husband. There was some bija mantra. But she's not initiated as a Vaishnavi in that sense. That's another type of initiation, the Pancharatrik Vaishnava initiation or like the Harinam initiation, Bhagavati Vidhi, where the guru takes all the responsibility for the disciple, even life after life, and the disciple surrenders to Krishna. That's not what happened here. See. And to do all these rituals in this day and age also is very difficult. I mean, maybe someone liked to try it, but whether they can do it perfectly. A little bit of change. One day she didn't wash her feet after eating, and then the whole, she lost... She got still benefit from what she was doing, but she didn't exactly what she wanted. She wanted something negative, so she got positive. If you wanted something positive, you'd probably still get something positive, but it wouldn't be as exactly what you expected. So, somehow, we should get a very clear understanding, what is devotional service? You go through all the rituals, you go through all the sadhana, you go through all levels of yoga, of meditation, of karma kanda, of ritual, fruitive activities for pious result. All these levels are below. Here's devotional service on top. Simply we're serving Krishna, akamo, sarvakamo, va, moksha kamo, daruditi, brain of bhakti yoga, simply for His pleasure. Motivated or at least unconditional devotional service. Whatever Krishna gives, that we accept. Even if someone has desire, they do it without any condition. But difference is that she took the vow for 1 year. In India, they have a system in South India that many people take 41-day vows. It's called the Ayyappa Puja. I don't know if there's any South Indians here that know about this. I mean, they know, but I don't know if anyone else knows. But they worship this deity who they think is connected with Vishnu and Shiva, although there's a lot of controversy that this deity is not really mentioned in the Vedas. It was, and anyway, I'm not going to go into all those controversies. I'm just giving as an example that the people follow every year, thousands, I mean hundreds, maybe hundreds of thousands of people follow this. They all dress black for 1 month. 41 days, they follow the four regulative principles. They're really proud. They come to our temple. Our temples are packed during that 41 days. They feel connected, you know. And where else, you know, then they take prasadam and they chant. They have to follow the four regular principles and they have to go to temples and do the pious works. Then at the end of the 41 days, they all go to the Sabarimala, some place on top of a mountain in Kerala. They all climb up to the top of the hill and then there's some mystic light comes out from the hill and they see the deity. They do their final oblation and they make their prayer, whatever they wanted, you know. But it's all, of course, with some objective. But then as they're coming down, it's like Maya makes this arrangement. On the way down the hill, there's like prostitutes set up 10 camps. You know, as the people walk down, you know, calling them over, you know. They got, you know, people with tent, liquor store. I mean, you know, it's like a holy mountain. But once you get out of the temple and you get back into the public area, you got like every conceivable Maya. It's already like set up there, you know. They can hardly get down to the bottom of the hill before they've, you know, completely broken, you know, all of whatever they've done in the last 41 days. So, this ritualistic ceremony, that's the kind of defect, is that you do it for a certain time, and when it's over, people say, phew. It's like, you know, they're just controlling, and then after that, and they ask for what they want, and then they do anything. So, that's why this type of prayaschitya, or ritualistic ceremony, has been compared to elephant bathing. You do something, you get purified, and then like the elephant goes and bathes, and it comes out and picks up dirt and throws it all over its back. You see, devotional service is not elephant bathing. Pure devotional service, when someone decides, okay, now it's from here on in. From here, eternally. This is the way I want to live. This is what I want to do. I want to simply do activities which are in devotional service. This is the vow we're taking. It's a very serious commitment. I mean, it's so serious. That's why Indians who understand what a devotee means, they will respect a devotee if they understand, you know, at least some, generally the many Hindus who understand, that this is a very great commitment. They are free to do any sinful or pious or any kind of activity they want. But a devotee is under vow to only do activities in devotional service. It's a very serious commitment. And therefore devotees are considered that kotyasyapi mahamune, that they're considered siddhanam, abhimuktanam, muktanam visiddhanam, amongst all liberated souls and all perfected beings. And Narayana Parayana, a surrendered devotee to Narayana, to Krishna, is considered to be the best. Prasantatma, the most peaceful. And the Sudurlabham, the most rare. So here we're taking devotional service and unfortunately, is that I think that many devotees, when they take the vows, they don't really understand what they're getting into. I mean, they understand it, obviously, but they haven't realized it to the point that later on they just become very careless. They don't take it seriously. And just like if you don't do the ritual properly, of course, you get some reverse result. This is not exactly a ritual. Whatever you've done in devotional service, you don't lose. There's no loss or diminution. You get to start over again. But so also, there's no guarantee you're going to get back to Krishna or be in devotional service in your next life. You take birth in this world again, in the family of a rich merchant, or even in the family of a devotee. We see that there's so many obstacles. If you're in the family of a devotee, you're really lucky. But say though someone doesn't take birth in a devotee's family, they're born in the family of a brahmana. And most brahmanas are mayavadis anyway, so when you start off as a mayavadi, and you may not get into devotional service so easily. Or you take birth in some rich family, and rich families are into enjoying life. Very few are Krishna conscious. So then you don't have any economic need, but then you have to somehow or another get in touch with the devotees, and they go in different circles. So to be able to continue in our devotional service is not so easy. Unless one is practically a pure devotee, or practically pure devotee, there's not a real guarantee you're going to be born in a devotee's family. Could be a rich merchant, could be a Brahmin. So, for the devotees, we have to really be careful to stay in devotional service, not to be deviated, not to loosen up. It's not just 1 year, but you can maybe I see like the appearance day of Prabhupada, my spiritual master, his disappearance. These days are like recommitment. Okay, it's eternal, but it's just to remind, you know, one more year, ready strictly, recommit, reevaluate what are the mistakes I did this year, where was I a little less committed than what I should have been, or less expert, and then always trying to tighten it up, make sure, you know, that we can improve. Every day, same thing, every night. The difference is, though, is that when one engages in pure devotional service, as Rupa Goswami said, one immediately feels the spiritual relief. Feels the pressure of karma pulled off. Diti got purified, but doesn't mean she didn't feel the same exact feelings as someone who's completely surrendered to Krishna. But she felt some relief. Because of being purified, and that those dirts came from her heart. Similarly, I mean, Diti got, that's like all side benefits of doing devotional service. Even though her attention was to kill Indra for doing the devotional service, it was to completely motivated. And the devotees doing unmotivated devotional service, they're fully absorbed, they feel a relief immediately. And then they start to develop more and more in their appreciation of Krishna's transcendental qualities. All the secrets of Krishna are revealed to the devotee because of, according to his desire and according to their surrender. Jayajita mang prapadyante tam satayo bhajamyaham. Name bhakta mam abhijanati, except for the devotee, no one else can know Krishna. So when we are preaching to devotees and trying to encourage them to engage in devotional service properly, the most frustrating thing is when they come back with statements like, well, you know, just compromising statements, statements that compromise what devotional service is. Devotional service is the topmost path. And when we enter on the path, it's for practicing it fully and for getting the real benefit. Otherwise, there's if somebody just wants to get a good husband, you don't have to surrender to Krishna to get a good husband. You can do pansavansa yagya for 1 year and then you get a great husband. You know, handsome, long life, everything. If you want to get, you know, from beauty, ugly to beautiful, or good. There's so many yagyas, rituals you can do. And the Vedas are filled with those things. So why do we go to Krishna? If we're going to Krishna, it's like Prabhupada said, you go to the richest man in the world, And you go and then you say, okay, what do you want? I'll give you some, anything you want. You say, okay, give me, I want as a souvenir the ashes from your cigarette ashtray. I'm going to hang it up on my wall in a plastic bag, remind me of I came to your office or something. It's insane. If you're going to go to all the trouble of seeing him, ask at least for something that's worthy of his stature. You're going all the way to Krishna, why ask for something you can get by just doing some little kind of a ritual or something? You're going to Krishna because you want to get love for Krishna. We want to serve Krishna eternally. We see what, you know, one time you're born as a son of a demigod, and the next time you're born as a son of a sudra, and the next time you're born as a sin of hell. This material, even Indra said, you know, I was worrying about my sense gratification. But even when you go to hell, you get sense gratification. It's not that only heaven you get sense gratification. People are enjoying in hell. And I saw, you know, it's like you got lepers in a leper colony sometimes, and they're all, hands are falling off, and there's like horrible thing. They're enjoying illicit sex. They're having intoxication. They're having some form of happiness. It's not that it's all rotten, but they're in a hell, but they're still getting sense gratification. So, I mean, sense gratification is there in the most hellish condition, in the most heavenly condition. But devotional service is transcendental. And that devotional service is something so great, and Lord Chaitanya is giving it to us, which is normally like only achieved by very pious people. And even though we don't have any visible pious, you know, to that extent, asset that we should be getting this mercy. By the mercy of Srila Prabhupada, he brought this mercy of Lord Chaitanya's giving it to everyone. So we should take advantage and be just very clear where pious activity is at, where sinful activity is at, where rituals are at, where everything is at, where envy and hatred and all the vices are at. Those are like really down on the totem pole. And we should just categorically clear all these things from our heart, completely concentrating on serving Krishna. Knowing that there's no one as merciful and kind as Krishna, and knowing that this is actually the very best thing that we could ever achieve. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Any question? Of course, it's just like this verse is also in the book, that if someone engages in devotional service, even if he's full of material desire, free from material desire, or desire liberation, that they should engage in devotional service with the idea Krishna will fulfill the desire, like in this verse. Yetu nechantyapi parang te swarta kusala smitaha. Although those who are interested only in worshipping the Supreme Person of Godhead do not desire anything material from the Lord and do not even want liberation, Lord Krishna fulfills all their desires. Even as someone wants to engage in devotional service for the purpose with some objective in mind, Krishna will fulfill their desire. It's given here that how one should perform these different vows. And in all the purports, Prabhupada recommends that that the better is to simply engage in devotional service. The ritual, of course, you had to do it exactly properly. And I question whether some of these rituals whether one has to be a brahmana to do it or have a brahman do it. Because chanting these mantras with Om and everything. Om Namo Bhagavate Mahapurushaya Mahavibhuti Pataye Swaheti Swaha Swaha. They had to do oblations in the fire. That means you had to call in the fire. You had to do oblations. These are this particular one, not there's different kinds, but this particular ones, some of them seem to be for those who are brahmanas. Of course, and women in those days didn't all get specifically brahman initiations. The point is that Kasyapa Muni, he taught his wife how to do it. Here it gives the whole process. Whether we are qualified to actually instruct someone, if somebody wants to read the book and do it at their own risk, you know. But since we are not trained up in this process of ritualistic ceremonies, there may be other things which are not mentioned here. If someone wants to know how to offer food to Vishnu, we can teach them how to offer food. In one sense, it's a good ceremony. It says here the wife should not speak harshly to the husband for 1 year. Husband should treat the wife very nicely. Indicating devotee should be doing that anyway, all the time. But women who peacefully live with their husband and children. Even it says that the women who do this, they should not only worship Vishnu, they should not only worship the brahmanas, but they should also worship women who live peacefully with their husband and children. That a wife who peacefully is serving her husband, living with husband and children peacefully, not in some agitated, disturbed way, she is worshipable by other women. She's a, you know, she's like some kind of like a mini deity. She's very successful in her life. I mean, many interesting points here. If someone wants to do it, I would, you know, from outside, they want to do it. Well, pretty well detailed here. I don't think we know any more than what's given here in the book, except we could tell people maybe some of the details, like how you offer prasadam or how you do a fire sacrifice. But whether whether we're qualified in that sense to really, I don't think we could take the commitment that, like Kasyapa did, okay, this is, you do it like this, and then I'll guarantee this result. There may be brahmanas in India, I'm sure there are brahmanas who know these ritualistic ceremonies, and it may be that everything is here that you need to know. I didn't go over it that closely. There may be that there's something else you need to know. So I don't, generally, it's in the book, someone can follow, but I know that in the Narayan Kavacha mantra, Prabhupada mentioned in a letter or somewhere that you should receive the mantra from pure devotees. So then if somebody did is they got the original tapes where Prabhupada was chanting the mantras, and then they sell that. It's like an underground thing. So you're hearing the mantras from Prabhupada. The ultimate purport is that if you do devotional service, you'll achieve these results also without any loss of diminution. But if somebody just wants to do it for 1 year and do that, well, they can do that. But I don't know whether we should promote that. Maybe something to be discussed. Maybe because people are so materialistic, it's a way of getting people to take up Krishna consciousness for a period of time. Then after that, they may want to stick with it. Like if you advertise to people, you know, people that have have AIDS or something, you can get, you can do the pungsavana and get cured. But then people may want to sue you later if they don't get cured. But maybe one day they didn't wash their feet or something. Who can say they did it right? they did it right, people would get cured from even incurable diseases. So, it's a complicated thing. Anything we do, you need a guru. So you do rituals, you also need a guru to do the rituals. There's an acharya. Even when Indra would do a ritual, he had to have, when his guru was angry at him and left his spiritual guru, then he went to, what was that, by killing the one with the three heads, what was his name? Visharupa. Visharupa. Because you needed a guru to perform the ritual also. You need a priest. Someone who'll guide you. So just like there's some devotees, they're born like they're Brahmins and they studied how to do all these things. So they may be qualified as a priest to guide someone through the ritual ceremonies. But as devotees, we are trained in doing the Pancharatrik system as well as the Bhagavati system of devotional service. And we may need a little refresher course if some Brahmin is going to take his profession as being a Brahmin and have people do ritualistic ceremonies to maintain his family life. And like people are doing jobs to maintain their family, well, you can be a Brahmin also. A Vaishnava can also act as a Brahmin as an occupation. While he's personally doing devotional service, he may train other people in doing certain rituals. But as a devotee, if we do it with the objective of making money, then you become a purohit, and then you get to take some of the karma. If you're doing it purely with the objective that, well, this will engage people in devotional service, even indirectly, and this may help them, then it could be accepted by Krishna as a devotional service. Anyway, the point of this vow is to please Vishnu. So if you do this vow, someone can please Vishnu. If you do chanting Hare Krishna in devotional service, you also please Krishna. So, and there's not so many hard and fast rules. Generally, we encourage people to take up the chanting regularly. But if someone wants to do it, one has to be very much in the mode of goodness to do this yajna. So very much in the mode of goodness type of yajna. That's why it's so purifying. It's hard to imagine in the West somebody that was this much in the mode of goodness to be able to do this. But there may be only some yoga camp. Very difficult. It's very hard to find anybody of that standard in their house to having that much cleanliness and everything to be able to even do this. People got the pet dogs and the cats running around. And well, we heard how some of the spiritual masters wanted to spread the Harinam to other higher planetary systems. But which planet it spread to at this time? There are some planets in the higher planetary systems where the Harinam is being spread.